a question about complexity. You had mentioned the simplicity and complexity. Isn't it possible to have a complex life and still have a simple attitude?
Complex?
Life and still have a simple approach.
What do you mean, complex life?
So, you were talking about making things simple and avoiding, as an example, you were saying avoiding things that you don't need, and that sometimes life is actually very complex. And I was wondering if you can still have a simple approach in while living in a complex world.
No, but what I am suggesting is that we see the world as complex because we are complex. If we are simple, then the world wouldn't appear that complex. We would know exactly what to do. So it's not complexity or simplicity is not out there. It's in our own mind. So it's not that the world is complex and I have to become simple. The world is whatever the world is. If I am complex, if I am complicated, I will see the situation as complicated. If I am simple, I'll see it as simple. So complexity and simplicity is in our mind, not in the world outside. Yeah.
Can you just a little bit enlighten us with moksha? How can we achieve moksha with our karmas?
Well, about moksha, first of all, we need to ask whether we want moksha. Because moksha is reading, literally means freedom. And moksha cannot be the goal for everybody. It can be a goal for only those who feel they are not free. Because we seek what we don't have. And only someone who feels that I am in great bondage right now, only that person understands the value of freedom and would want to be free. So in order for moksha to be a real goal for us, but the moksha not as a goal, just because the book, the Gita says moksha is a goal, so how can I get moksha? That attitude will not help here. The attitude is, do I really feel a sense of bondage? Do I really feel I am locked up in a prison? Then I would want, do anything to get out of the prison. So first requirement for moksha is, of course, a deep sense of bondage that we need. You know, it's like this, if we feel we are ignorant, then knowledge can be the goal. If we feel we are in bondage, then freedom can be the goal. So what our goal is not something that the books are going to determine for us. What our goal is, it depends on what our present experience is. And so moksha as a goal would make sense only if our present experience is that of bondage. And if it is a present experience is one of bondage, then we need to ask, bondage of what? And then if we have an answer to that, then we need to do how I can get rid of that bondage. One way of looking at that is, of course, the bondage to our own body-mind complex. That we have become servants of our own body. The body makes its demand on us, the mind makes its demand on us, and we have just become slaves of the demands that our body and mind makes on us. And that's our bondage, and we want to be free from this. And one way would be then, every time my body says, do this, I would say, wait a minute, I am the boss, not you. But every time the mind says something, wait a minute, I am the boss. So affirming the freedom of the soul, every time our freedom tends to be taken away by the demands that these coverings make on us, that's the way to moksha. And therefore, every work which will help me break that hold that the body, mind, or these different koshas that they have on me, that will make me free. Every work that will add to my bondage, of course, will not make me free. So work done in the spirit of yoga would help me get rid of the bondage.
In the course what you just explained, I just had a quick question in my mind. See, most of us who are living in this world, we have probably some sense of bondage or not. I'm not sure. I haven't really thought seriously whether I'm really feeling the bondage or not. But I was just thinking about Shakyamuni, Buddhadev, and he actually prayed under the tree to get the moksha. So what is basically, I'm trying to connect, because not all of us really think that we are a kind of quote-unquote feeling the bondage, so we need the moksha. But he felt, although, I mean, what was...
Yeah, he felt it, so he strove for it, which is why he could make that firm resolution, I will not get up from this seat until I attain that enlightenment. But he could make that resolution because he felt the intensity of that sense of bondage.
So is it the enlightenment and bondage, would you say it's different, or how?
No, enlightenment means really just getting knowledge. So whatever it is that we lack, it's like this. For instance now, if I'm really hungry, if I feel like I'm really going to die of hunger, then I will do anything to get some food. I won't kind of think like, oh, is it good for me to knock on some door, or, you know, just anything. So it's a question of survival. That kind of spiritual hunger, only when that comes, then we can be like the Buddha and say, yes, I'll do it. But if that has not come, then it's more a kind of an intellectual curiosity. Oh, this is what the book says, and what is the meaning of this verse, and it's good. But it's still at the very cerebral intellectual level. So we just have to wait till we become hungry. No, what can we do? Yeah.
So can I just still thinking, and is it, can I say that, as you said, that whenever we strive for something we really, really crave for, and then we make our best to get that. So does it mean that in that terms, that moksha can mean differently for different people? For Buddhadev, it was the spiritual need, the craving. And obviously, I mean, for some it's the enlightenment, for some it's the knowledge. Does it make sense?
No, moksha means freedom. Now, knowledge also can be a great goal, provided we say, my present problem is ignorance. I don't know. So if the state of my ignorance is so torturous to me, then I would want anything to get knowledge. Or if I'm kind of consumed by the idea that I am so imperfect, then perfection is the goal I would want. Essentially, being absolutely perfect, being absolutely free, being absolutely knowledgeable are not different things. But this is how we would look upon our goal, depending on what we lack right now. Yes. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
In that aspect, regarding bondage, when we were born, the first bond was given in the name of religion. That you are Hindu, you are Muslim, you are Sikh, you are Isai, you are Christian. And that bondage is, we are fighting based on that. The second bond, as we grow, we were given the caste, creed, so many things. As we growing on this life, we are getting bondage in every step. First religion, then caste, then knowledge, then status. So many bondage, the things are covering on us. How can we get rid of all these things and be one? We are still divided. We are still, whichever spiritual leader is coming, we are still bounded with one thing or the other thing. And these boundaries are not... We are not getting rid of these boundaries, then how can we get moksha from all these boundaries?
No, you're using everything in plural. We. It's everything.
We,
this is.
We means I. I said I am bondage.
No, because what I'm saying is this is not a collective activity. Everything is it depends on the person. And nobody is forcing you to remain within this bondage. If you feel that the consciousness of caste or religion or these things are binding you, you don't have to get bound by it. Don't try to circumscribe your identity to being just a Hindu or just this or just that. I mean, who's stopping you? So it's not like tomorrow if you say, I am a human being, above all these narrow labels of religions and caste and blah blah blah, who can stop you? So it's really up to you to decide. It's not something, it's not, you're not being branded like this, you know. So we all have the freedom to transcend these narrow identities that we have created. And we all can do it. So it's not difficult. But whether the question is whether we want to do it. You see, that's the thing. Yeah.
I'm going back to the beginning when you were explaining. You gave the example of the having the bathtub full of water. You want to see your Atma as a picture, and then you see the waves. How would you recommend to us as an individual how we should go about reducing the waves in the water? I mean, there's so many things in our lives coming from different directions that create the waves.
Yeah.
So how should we approach that? I mean, I know it's step by step, but where should
As I said, one thing is to find out whether all those waves are necessary, in the first of all. We might find a lot of these things which are creating the waves are really not essential. So we can at least minimize the waves a little bit. Then I think spending, even if it's a few minutes daily, morning and evening, the practice of prayer or meditation or japa does help in stilling the mind for a while, even if it is for a short time. And once the mind acquires the taste of just being still, the more you get that experience, the more you want to dwell in it. And then it becomes much easier to kind of still the mind. But until you have had a kind of a glimpse into that experience, you might think like, what's the big deal? Why do it? Life is great as it is. But I think those who have made a serious attempt at prayer, japa, meditation, find that stillness that is experienced here is so peaceful. It's so full of joy that no joy that you have experienced in life so far can come anywhere near it. It's not simply a question of just joy. It gives us a clarity, a kind of clarity with which then, with that clear mind, then you focus that mind on any of the other things. It becomes so very easy to make intelligent choices or take intelligent decisions. A lot of the times when we choose something, we make our own choices, but oftentimes we make wrong choices. Or the choices that, instead of making us happy, make us more miserable. And that's because we took that, because the mind was still clouded. We thought something would work in one way, it didn't. Now with a clear mind, if you do it, that doesn't mean that you will always make perfect choice. But the possibility of making choices not in our interest would become less. So there's a lot to be said in favor of spending at least a few minutes every day in trying to still the mind. And once we kind of become adepts in that, then you can be in the midst of enormous activity and then yet be calm and peaceful. And the best example is Krishna himself. He's just there in the middle of the battlefield with arrows going. If you've seen this TV Mahabharata, you can see zoom, zoom, everything is going around. And he's there so calm and peaceful. And we can be the same way in our life. We'll be able to get more work done. The quality of our work will be better. And you can be calm and peaceful and joyful. So let's try it out.